Okay, so thanks for bearing with me. I'm Sara Petty, and I'm going to talk to you today about updating open data standards based on the journey that brought us from the frictionless specification version 1 to the version 2, which is currently ongoing. So briefly about myself, I'm the international network lead at Open Knowledge Foundation and also the Frictionless Data Community Manager. I love the digital commons, and I'm based in Bologna, Italy. I left here some ways you can contact me via email, X, formerly known as Twitter, and GitHub as well. So before we start, I just wanted to give you a quick introduction for those of you who might not know the Frictionless Data Project and the Frictionless Standards, about the Frictionless Data Package, which is the core Frictionless specification. The Frictionless Data Package is basically a standard to package your data. It's very simple and very easy. Basically, you package your data together with a descriptor, so containing your metadata and a schema about your data. And there I put a link if ever you want to explore all the specification of Frictionless Data, you can just go on that website. But so the Frictionless Data Package was released in 2016 in its version 1. So some years have passed meanwhile, and it has actually gained a lot of traction in research communities, academia, but also it has often been mentioned in the open data guidelines of governments and public administrations, and it's often used by data wranglers as well. So we started to think about what actually was the success of Frictionless, why was this standard so successful, and these are some of the things that we came up with. So the first thing is, so the Frictionless specifications were not developed alone in a room, but they are really the outcome of more than 10 years of iteration with a community of practices, stakeholders, and also a full engagement on issues around interoperability, data analysis, and data publications. As you've seen from my slide before, the specifications are very simple. And I think we think that that's also one of the key of the success of it. Basically, because they are very simple, they disrupt as little as possible whatever existing infrastructure is already there. And when thinking about actually the frictionless specifications, we always had in mind, as an example, the CSV, which is a standard for tabular data. And we think that the key element of CSV and why it is so adopted, it's because it is so simple. That everybody can use it. It's not maybe the most adaptable to specific use cases, but it's still adoptable by almost all, and so it's one of the most used, actually, tabular standard right now. So the simplicity of the frictionless standards also mean that they are extensible and customizable by design. So they are designed for tabular data, but we have a lot of people in the community that use it for other data as well. We have metadata standards that are machine usable because, of course, we want to have to bear in mind that data must be fair, but we also keep in mind that there are humans that might want to manipulate that data, and so the metadata standards are also human editable. Another thing also very important for us was not to reinvent the wheel, so try to reuse as much as possible existing standards and existing formats for data. And then last but not least, we tried to build as much as possible something that was language, technology, and infrastructure agnostic. Once that was done, we started thinking about adoptions of those standards. And one thing that became clear quite quickly was that a standard alone was sometimes not enough, and that you need also a technical implementation of those standards. And it's funny because I was talking yesterday with someone from the frictionless community who was telling me exactly this, that it's so great that we basically built libraries on top that you can use to perform a number of things on your data. For example, validate your data or extract your data. And those are present in a number of programming languages. So I work at the Open Knowledge Foundation where the core frictionless team sits. And we developed, for example, a Python framework, which is the first link that you see there. But then the community that uses Frictionless also developed other libraries in other programming languages that perform some of the same functions as well. So we have Frictionless R, for example, Frictionless JavaScript, and those all form what we call the Frictionless Universe. And here's a website that I'll definitely encourage you to go and have a look if you're interested in. So, okay, it's all very nice. Everybody adopted the standard and it gained traction. Well, why did you need to update then? Well, of course, since 2016, issues started to accumulate in the GitHub repository. Basically last year with the core team at Frictionless, we started having conversations with the community and we started to go through all these issues, try to triage them and see those that were more requested, those where there was more conversation ongoing, those that made more sense because of the internet requirements that came up during the years. And so we decided to start a draft roadmap for version 2. And then the second part was, OK, now that we decided to update those standards, how do we coordinate this update? And that was probably the part I took most part in as a community manager. And here I tried to resume like the key elements of this update and the things that it was important to take into consideration for us for this coordination, for the coordinating this update. So the first thing is, of course, don't do it alone. Right from the beginning, it was very clear to us that we had to take into account and bring in people from as many backgrounds as possible, because as I said before, the frictionless data standards are very simple and they are adaptable to many different use cases. But if you want to build something so simple, you need to also hear a lot of people, have in mind a lot of use cases, because they can actually help you to build a common data model that will fit then the needs of everyone, or at least it will help you find some minimal common ground. And so when we started our frictionless data specification working group, we brought in people from research institutes and universities from different academic fields, but also libraries, open data cooperatives, for example, and engineers as well. The other thing is be clear. So the first thing that basically the working group asked us was, OK, very nice, you want to do this, but please let's define the overarching goals of this project. Let's have a roadmap of this project and let's have it somewhere that it's easy to find. So for us, it was quite easy. We have a project website, which is frictionlessdata.io. So there we published a website announcing the specs update, detailing the goals, the deliverables. And from there, we also linked to the roadmap, which is actually on GitHub, because that's where also the technical discussion with the community is happening in all the issues that you see there. The third thing that was in the beginning a bit taken for granted, but it actually needed some thinking as well, was to decide how to decide. Because, OK, we sat down with the working group and everybody was like, yeah, OK, we'll do this with consensus. But then we clearly realized that it needed some definition as well, because not everyone was understanding what consensus really meant. Does everyone need to participate every time to the discussion, even if maybe it's some part of the specs that's not really important to them? And so we basically decided that PR can be merged in the specs only if 2/3 of the working group has participated in the discussion and has a favorable opinion about it, and that consensus, we understand as consensus when we reached a kind of like solution that everybody can live with. And the blog, it's in the announcement blog if you want to go and have a look. So that's it. So just to give you a view of where we are now, at the moment, basically we had 36 issues that were part of our first roadmap. So 10 out of 36 are now closed already. Of the remaining 26 open issues, 11 already have a first PR proposal, and then all 23 over those 26 have already actually an ongoing working group discussion. What we decided to add also as a kind of like information for the community, for the working group as well, but also for the broader community, is to have a public live tracker, also on GitHub, live as an issue. And basically you can go there and we update it on a weekly basis to basically have a place where people can monitor the progress. And our aim by June 2024 is, of course, the release of the frictionless specs version 2. But we would also like to release a small Python metadata mapper and also some integrations in external systems like Seekern and Zenodo. To conclude, I just wanted to mention that this update is made possible thanks to the generous support of the NLNet Fund NGI Zero in Trust. There's a lot of fantastic opportunities out there that maybe could be useful for you as well. They fund a lot of open source projects, so I encourage you to go and have a look. And then I wanted to thank you all for listening to me today. I left there a bunch of links that might be useful. So the first one, the frictionlessdata.io that I mentioned a couple of times, is the project website where everything is linked from. So if you want to find, for example, all the GitHub repositories, you will find it there, but also all the different project pages. We have a community chat on Slack, but if you prefer to use an open protocol, you can access it via Matrix as well. I left the website of the Open Knowledge Foundation and also our Twitter handles of the Frictionless Data Project and Open Knowledge Foundation. Thanks.
So we have time for one question.
Yes, thank you. Back
Thank you. So the question was how to agree on a data model, because that's very, very difficult to agree upon. I think for us the key, it's of course something very difficult to do, but it's basically to take away all the layers of complications and all the sometimes specifics of some type of data. And instead, what we did was basically collect all the kind of data that we wanted to support and try to understand what the common things were and basically start from there. Of course, again, it is very simple, adaptable, but it is also something that is focused on tabular data. It is extensible to other kind of data as well, but that's the kind, of course, you have to have a data type in mind. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Thanks again to Sarah.
Thank you.